This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Their buildings might be closed, but libraries have been busy with many virtual offerings to patrons. But also libraries are reaching out to vulnerable people in their communities, sharing Wi-Fi capacity and increasing virtual offerings. They're also pondering their future, how and when to open, and how to make sure books and other items they need are available. In this part of the program, we're going to be talking about what's happening at local libraries. What's your local library been doing to keep you connected and or lift your spirits? How have you used it or seen it being used during the coronavirus pandemic? Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org. And joining me for this part of the program, Lori Fisher, Assistant State Librarian at New Hampshire State Library. She's also a former director of the Baker Free Library in Bow and serves on several state and national committees. Lori, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me this morning.
And also with us, Amy Lappin, President of the New Hampshire Library Association and Deputy Director of the Lebanon Public Libraries. Amy, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm thrilled to talk about libraries.
So let's start with you, Amy. Libraries have closed their doors. They might look closed, but what's going on behind those doors that the public might not realize?
Oh, my gosh. Well, first, I think we need to remember that while our doors are closed, the people who still work in our libraries are, in many cases, we're still here. You know, some of us are alone in our buildings, and others are at their dining room tables. But we're providing information, resources, requests for materials, programming, Wi-Fi, books groups, story times. You know, we're still out there. And we still love to hear from our patrons, so people can get to us by email, by phone, in many cases, but certainly I think email in all cases. So if you're out there thinking, I know the library's closed, but maybe they could host a dance party, offer online yoga, have a poetry night, you know, we're still here, so contact us. We're out there doing a ton of things. Peter, I'd also just like to take a quick opportunity. Well, I know we're going to talk a lot about public libraries today. I've been a public librarian for the last 16 years, and that's where my focus is. But I think we need to give a real shout out to our school librarians and our college librarians who are doing so much work these days. You know, they're supporting remote learning to students and helping parents navigate education. They're helping teachers find resources. They're looking at copyright issues as a lot of this goes online. But getting students and educators and families what they need to be successful. So I would be remiss getting through this interview. I want to put that out there in the front that we don't, if I didn't just acknowledge the awesome work that all of the librarians in the state are providing right now.
Certainly. Thank you for that. And if we have any school librarians or folks that you've mentioned out there who want to weigh in on the conversation, tell us what's been going on in school libraries right now. 1-800-892-6477. Lori, I want to get your take on that same question in a moment. But Amy, I can't stop thinking about the online dance parties. What?
Oh, well, you know, we hosted one at the Lebanon Public Libraries yesterday, and some people showed up and just had a good time. People are looking for a way, Peter, just to connect, you know, so whatever, you know, maybe it's a little goofy, but just to say hey and be there. And we have some outgoing librarians who are willing to do that. But, you know, we're also hosting like a coffee connection. You know, some of the programming we provide at our libraries, actually, I think a lot of the programming we provide is about the program, but it's also about people and communities connecting. And so, for example, our baby story times are wonderful, and they support early literacy and, you know, check a lot of really great boxes. But they're also a way for caregivers who are sometimes isolated even without a global pandemic of getting out and seeing other adults and talking about their experiences with the children that they're caregiving for, whether it's their own or someone else, and just seeing an adult during the day. So we are doing that virtually as well, and letting that sort of thing happen. It's the connections, right, between, it's the people that are the most important thing, I think, in libraries, and we have not forgotten that.
Well, thank you for that. Lori, what do you think? What's going on behind closed doors at libraries that might be beneficial to people that maybe they haven't heard of or maybe they don't realize?
There's a lot going on, and it's not just all virtual services either. Although virtual services has been a big part of what we offer, even when our buildings are open. And I just want to refer briefly to the thing that most people probably have heard of. Most of our libraries participate in the New Hampshire Downloadable Books Consortium, which has downloadable ebooks and audiobooks for patrons. And we now have an average daily checkout of 4,200 items.
A daily checkout.
Huge.
Digitally.
Yes. Yes. It's crazy and useful. And 82% of our ebook titles were checked out in the last 30 days. But even though that's the case, we still have 7,000 to 8,000 unique titles to choose from right now. So for library users and those residents who haven't thought that their library would have something for them, libraries are still offering library cards. You can email, you can do it over the phone. So contact your local library and you can get more access to digital resources.
So you can get a library card if you haven't already gotten one. You can get that remotely so you don't have to engage with people in person. So let's say once you get your library card, you want to get something digitally. You need a computer for that? Do you need a tablet? Do you need an e-reader of some kind? What technology do you need to take out a book in a digital format?
Well, that's a good question. And any of those would work. Me personally, I read books on my phone. Some people read books on their computer. Some read on their tablets. Any of that works. And many libraries are also offering tech support to either over the phone or virtually through a platform such as Zoom or things like that. So check into your local library and ask the questions. Like Amy was saying, call or email because someone will get back to you because most of us are still working even though our buildings are closed. And I just want to point out too that the internet obviously is an important component of digital resources. And we do have areas in our state where the internet and the broadband is not in the greatest shape. And I think that's one of the things that this pandemic has pointed out is the need for better broadband infrastructure throughout portions of New Hampshire. And, you know, there are smaller libraries in particular like Bath up north that they ended up putting a Wi-Fi extender on the roof of their library so that residents could use more of the internet through their whole parking lot. And you know, this is not just critical to get resources for education and entertainment. There are a lot of people throughout New Hampshire applying for unemployment, and internet access is crucial for that because that is the easiest way for people to apply for those benefits. So libraries are critical in their communities usually, particularly smaller libraries, to provide that free public Wi-Fi access. A lot of communities don't have any place else that does that.
It reminds me so much, Lori, of stories we heard during 2008-2009, the Great Recession. People suddenly either thrown out of their homes or they're suddenly unemployed. And what do? A lot of them turn to libraries, going to libraries.
Yes.
For computer access, the internet, or just a place of refuge, or what Amy was saying, like a place of human connection. I don't know if you thought of that as well, but geez, libraries being a backstop, really, for people going through tough times.
Well,
Go ahead, Lori.
I was just going to say, they really are, you know, and we do have libraries in the state, too, that one thing about librarians is that we often know many of our patrons, and we certainly try to know our patrons as well as we can. And I've heard more stories, Peter, about librarians actually calling people they know don't have Wi-Fi at home, people they know don't have internet, people they know are really isolated. And like I said before, we have people who come in who are coming in, you know, when we were open because they're isolated. It may not be to check out books. It may not be to look at movies. It may be just to say hi to the librarian or just to do the puzzle at the table with other people around. You know, people live in isolation in cases. So I've heard about librarians calling patrons and saying, hey, how are you? What can we get you? Do you need anything? We also are some of our libraries where we can, and it's hard. In our state, our libraries are many different sizes with many different resources, but those, I think all of our libraries are doing everything that they can within their budget and within their community. But we do have some libraries that are able to purchase hotspots, to purchase laptops, or may already have those resources and have worked hard to get those as far as they can to people who they think could use them at this time. But there's things that are non-technology related too that are happening, you know, like the phone calls between librarians and patrons, and just really things like at our library in Lebanon, we have a community garden that has 23 beds in it. We've decided that can go on this year. It doesn't, people aren't there often together, and it's really non-technology based, but it'll be happening. And I saw another library, the Jaffrey Public Library, that had often had a seed exchange, and this year they just mailed seeds out to their patrons to start gardens at home.
Before we get too far from the unemployment and the budget picture, we get a question from Christine that I want to bring in now. Mm. Christine wrote in to ask, well, she says, in times of high unemployment rates, libraries are dependent on more than ever, especially technology use, as people don't have the resources to afford internet connections or home computers. Libraries will need many more resources in the aftermath of this pandemic. How is New Hampshire planning to support libraries as they manage the influx of the public that use the resources that libraries provide? Maybe you have some insight on this, Lori. What is the state doing anything extra for libraries when libraries will be at a greater need?
We are. We did receive $122,861 from the CARES Act. This was part of the $50 million that the Institute of Museum and Library Services received overall and was distributed through them to all the states based on a formula that is used for our regular annual federal allocation. So while it doesn't sound like a huge amount, this money will be used for statewide services going forward. And what we're looking at right now, we're looking at a number of things, but one of the more pressing concerns is a virtual platform for our summer reading programs, especially because our smaller libraries, a lot of them are not going to be able to afford to buy into a service like that on their own. It's similar to, you know, New Hampshire downloadable books, in that we want to make sure that we're providing services that use our tax dollars and our support from our communities very effectively and efficiently, and working together and collaborating with libraries across the state is the best way to get services. So, and there is a movement right now in both the House and the Senate to have more monies going to libraries through the federal government in the next stimulus package. So we'll have to wait and see on that, but things are in the works right now to do some statewide support. Some of that also might include some items that libraries are going to need for eventual physical reopening of our buildings. But again, all of this right now, we're trying to figure this out, and we are moving forward as quickly as we can.
And so, listeners, we're speaking today about libraries and how they are engaging with their communities during the coronavirus pandemic. Give us a call to let us know about virtual events you've heard about. Maybe ones you've attended or plan to attend. Now's also the time to let us know about creative ways your local library has remained relevant. The number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange@nhpr.org. NHPR recently spoke with Nicole Luongo-Cloutier, a reference and special collections supervisor at the Portsmouth Public Library. She spoke about an effort to collect stories from patrons about life under the coronavirus pandemic. We did have a clip from her. We'll play from her shortly. I did want to bring in a comment from Susan, who wrote in, New Hampshire is home to the Peterborough Town Library, the first free public library in the country. Since 1833, it has served the residents of the Monadnock area. It is about to undergo a restoration and renovation, years in the making, so it's in the process of moving to temporary quarters, but it's still serving its patrons with virtual story hours, bookbinding instruction, tech classes, book club, poetry readings, resource for answers to all questions, virtual pizza night gatherings for tweens, and online tutoring. Susan continues, I, for one, depend more on my library today than ever. I connect with others through its online programming, and I feel I have a lifeline to the world. That's the comment from Susan. If you'd like to write to us as well, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. And let's talk to Chris in Loudoun. Chris, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was wondering if there was any discussion about helping the libraries in New Hampshire to find a way to get like PPE equipment and hand sanitizers, and if they are sharing with the libraries how to ensure that the libraries are safe and healthy for patrons to return.
Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate it. Amy, is that a good question for you to take?
Sure.
I'm happy to, and Lori, feel free to jump in. But yes, of course, there is ongoing discussion about what we're going to need. I think we are trying to wait to reopen until it's safe to do so, and that there is a pathway forward. And right now, it's really going to be based on the science. And I think at this point, there are a lot of unknowns. You know, we talk about how long will the virus be on our books. Is it different in paper than it is in plastic? How long, if you return a book, where, how long do I need to keep that in quarantine? Is it 24 hours? Is it 48? You know, is it a week? We don't know, and there are a lot of different numbers out there right now. There certainly are many people nationally and locally looking at these issues, and we won't reopen until we know it's safe to do so, probably with some protocols. You know, we talk about how many people we can have in the buildings at a time, but we certainly want to make sure our patrons are safe. I was thinking about this yesterday, and with books, you know, people are worried now. Sometimes they think, well, what do we need to do with groceries to come back into our home? And with books, you know, books literally sometimes live in people's beds with them, right? So they're all over the house with them. So we do want to make sure that people are safe. Most libraries at this point are saying, keep what you have and don't bring them back to us yet until the science is behind it.
And we, along the lines of thinking about germs on books, we get a note from someone who didn't share their name, but they wrote, is the interlibrary loan program still operating for libraries that are offering drive-up or walk-up services?
Let me answer that, Peter. So the interlibrary loan advance service is through the New Hampshire State Library. It is one of those programs that's funded with federal dollars, and it is statewide. That has not been running since March 18th, and you can understand why. I mean, we go all over the state 5 days a week on specific van routes, and it's exchanging these materials among a lot of different places. And that right now, like Amy said, is really an unknown. I'll refer to a new partnership that's going on between the Institute of Museum and Library Services, which is a federal government organization, OCLC, which is a global library cooperative, and a scientific laboratory, also global, Bartel. They are going to do specific scientific testing in the next couple weeks on materials so that libraries and museums and archives all have better data to go on to decide how materials should be handled in light of the virus. Mm-hmm. We don't want to become a vector.
Right.
That's the bottom line. So interlibrary loan service will resume at some point. But again, as with any thoughts about reopening, I'll echo what the governor is doing on the state level. It's going to have to be a phased, staged reopening for libraries as well. And that's going to be community based. Each community is going to have to look, and each library is going to have to look at what resources they have, what their community needs are, and how they feel they want to move forward. We have coordinated a task force for reopening New Hampshire libraries. There are 20 librarians on it. We've held a couple meetings, and we're planning to put together a document that will give some best practice guidelines in the next couple weeks. But again, as Amy said, there's a lot of factors with this, including what's happening at the state level, recommendations from the CDC and New Hampshire DHHS, also the community. That each library should be and usually is involved with their emergency management team as well as their public health officer. And to get a little bit of an answer to the earlier question about, you know, making sure employees and the public are safe, I mean, there will be things that are going to be needed so that we can maintain social distancing, people have the appropriate amounts of hand sanitizer, we don't want to be taking PPE away from first responders, so there's going to be protocols probably put in place about masks and who provides those. So there are a lot of things to think about, but that's why the task force was formed. So in each community, they will need to come up with their own plan for reopening their libraries, but we're working on best practices to try to cull some of the information down, which is what we're good at as librarians. That's part of the main thing of what we do.
Listeners, we're speaking today about libraries, how they are remaining relevant during the coronavirus pandemic. We get this note from Lynn in Sugar Hill. She writes, the Abby Greenleaf Library in Franconia maintains a little free library in a town park. They keep it stocked with books for all ages, and anyone is welcome to take a book or leave a book. Little free libraries are a great resource. Some of them, at least as far as I've seen, are closed. They're just driving around Concord. There's one along a route I frequently travel that is emptied out, and probably one of the saddest signs of the times. A little free library with no books in it and a sign that says, "We'll reopen after the pandemic has passed." Listeners, give us a call if you've got an insight about your public library, what it's doing during the coronavirus pandemic. 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This November, should every American citizen have the option to vote by mail? Despite persistent pushback, polling suggests there's growing support from Democrats and Republicans. But time's running out for states who now face surging demand. I'm Celeste Headlee. The risks and the rewards of mail-in ballots. Next time on 1A.
That's This Morning at 10 here on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from New England College, where summer brings new opportunities to catch up, get ahead, or get to know college life. Classes start May 11th. Information at nec.edu/summer. Cloudy with some rain today. High temperatures upper 40s to around 50 degrees. It'll be cloudy with rain tonight, and the rainfall could be heavy at times, with low temperatures tonight in the low to mid 40s. You're listening to NHPR.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello, and today we're talking about libraries and what they're doing to serve their communities during the coronavirus pandemic. Library doors may be mostly closed, but there's activity within those walls. We are learning about what's going on and how it's been beneficial to the broader public. If you know of a way that your local library has made itself especially useful during the coronavirus pandemic, get in touch now. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. We're speaking with Lori Fisher, Assistant State Librarian at the New Hampshire State Library. She's also former director of the Baker Free Library in Bow and serves on several state and national committees. And Amy Lappin, president of the New Hampshire Library Association and deputy director of the Lebanon Public Libraries. And let's go straight to the phones and let's talk to Andy and Rye. Andy, thank you very much for calling. What's your comment?
Good morning. I'm the director of the Rye Public Library, and I wanted to thank Lori for the excellent work she's been doing at the state level, and hello to Amy. I just wanted to mention that along with so many libraries in the state, we are putting together a remote access programming schedule, a weekly newsletter. We've made phone calls out to almost an entire database of names to make a check-in and also offer our services. But I did want to talk in general about the fact that libraries at this time are indeed a backstop for individuals who have lack of technology skill or access specifically, but also at a time of uncertainty, the culture and community are just key points that the library in so many communities is really the source of. We have a very uncertain time, and there's nothing like the long enduring calm of human creativity that is created or offered by culture, and we can source that for people.
Well, Andy, thank you very much. Andy, Public Library Director in Rye, really appreciate your comment. With respect to checking in on patrons, we got this note from Keith on Facebook who said, "The Brookline Public Library has a children's librarian doing a Facebook Live story time every Wednesday morning, children's outreach coordinator reading a chapter book on Mondays and Fridays. Staff have also been calling on patrons." So it seems to be happening, Lori and Amy, checking in on patrons. And I think for many people who may not use libraries that often, that would be a surprising thing for a library to do. Amy, why would a library want to make that among its many priorities?
Well, I think libraries are at the heart. We're about community. You know, I think sometimes when you think library right away, you may think about our resources, but we really are about the people in our community. And they come to us because they can get good information and know we can help and resources, but they also come, you know, we're part of the community. We're people they can rely on. We're there. And it's amazing how many people come into our libraries every day just to check in, and we care.
So
care about them.
So yeah. So when a library makes a call on someone like that, what kind of assistance are they offering? I mean, are you calling and saying, "Hey, do you need anything to read?" Or are you saying, "Hey, do you have enough food right now? Do you need someone to deliver things to you?" Is that the kind of stuff?
I think it is more that. I mean, I think it's really a check-in to say, because a lot of us can't. The problem is it's hard to get actual physical books to people, although there are some communities who have found some creative ways to do that. But I think the phone calls themselves are to hear a voice, right, to let them hear a voice and know that there are people out there who care. But if someone in the conversation said, you know, I'm doing okay, but I've had a really hard time getting unemployment. I'm waiting for this check to come and it hasn't come. The librarian knows how to help that person get unemployment. In fact, one of our librarians made a very short video the other day walking people through the online steps. But it may be, here's some phone numbers to call, right? Or you know what, I think that maybe it would benefit you to talk to the person who provides social services in our town or the librarian, you know, would you mind if I gave them a call and let them know, or here's their phone number, you can call them. So it's still connecting people very much with resources, but I think often, Peter, it's just about saying, hi, there's somebody out there thinking about you.
We get this note go ahead. Sorry.
I just wanted to add that you have to remember that over 75% of our libraries, public libraries in the state, serve a population of under 7,500 people. And so those libraries, they know their patrons. They know them on a first name basis. And so calling them to check on them, particularly high risk category individuals, as well as individuals who they know live alone, and making sure that they don't need connection with community resources, or just making sure that they're doing okay mentally. I mean, that's one of the things libraries do best, is to connect people with resources. And I just want to give a shout out to the Howe Library in Hanover, because they have done a great job for their community. They became the coordinators for all of their town volunteers and the projects that have resulted from this COVID-19 pandemic. And so that's taking a load off of the other town departments and really utilizing their reference staff skills in a great way to support the community as a whole, and connecting people with both helping and also with resources for people who need help. So that's just one example of many.
We got this note from Jennifer Lee Reynolds of Belmont. She's the author of The Cat Who Loved the Moon. She says, the Laconia, Belmont, and Gilmanton year-round libraries have been doing readings on social media and sharing information about authors. That's been helpful to me as a debut children's book author who published earlier this year. The pandemic has interrupted in-person library readings that were scheduled, so many places have done a lot of online events to assist. I think what they're doing is great. There seems to be an increased focus on literature and the importance of accessing books no matter what these days. That's the comment from Jennifer Lee Reynolds. And let's go to the phones again and talk to Mike in Dover. Mike, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. My wife and I just moved here from Pennsylvania about a year ago. And back in Pennsylvania, there was a concerted effort to try and close down the library. We had to work very hard and didn't entirely succeed. But one of the things they were saying, the oppositional people, was, well, I've got my computer. I don't need a library. I can just look it up on the library. To which I said, I quoted Neil Gaiman, that you go to the internet and you find 100,000 answers. You go to a librarian, you find the right answer. So we should not let this concerted effort by some people out there, and I don't want to go into conspiracy theory, but some people may see this as an opportune time to, under the aegis of the COVID crisis, to start attacking our libraries. And that would be a horrid thing to happen.
Well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate your comments.
Can I comment on that, Peter?
Absolutely. Go for it.
I appreciate that comment very much. And I think that one thing we need to remember, well, there are two things that come to mind. And one is, it's great that there are so many people who can access the internet from home and find it a very useful tool. But we still have a great digital divide in this country, but in the state, you know, not everybody does have the internet at home. Not everybody does have a computer. Well, more people now have phones out of necessity. You really can't do homework on a phone, right? Like, I mean, you can, but it's a lot easier when you have Wi-Fi and a laptop and a keyboard. So that's one thing that our libraries are doing. I think people are also, when they rely on some of the things, you know, we're streaming movies from the library. We are getting digital books through New Hampshire downloadable books. And it seems like, gosh, well, it's just coming into my house. You know, it's coming in for free. But these things are provided often by our libraries. And while they may be free to the user who doesn't actually even need to go into our, some of people don't come into our physical buildings anymore, those are resources that your libraries and your towns and cities are paying to give you access to. So libraries, we're still out there, you know, and we're still providing an awful lot of services that maybe people, there's a little disconnect that it's actually coming from your library still.
We get this question from Greg in Portsmouth. Lori, maybe you know how to answer this one. He writes, he heard months ago, pre-COVID-19, that publishers were beginning to limit library-purchased digital copies of the latest books. Have publishers relented at all on this?
That's a great question. I think for an interim period, yes, they've lifted some restrictions, but this is still a point of tension that we will need to deal with as libraries going forward. It's been actually really good during this crisis that there have been publishers who have lifted those kind of restrictions, and we actually, for the Downloadable Books Consortium, have been able to purchase additional content that we wouldn't have been able to purchase prior to this pandemic. However, this is a concern. Often libraries are paying quite a bit more money for any digital copy of an item than an individual would pay if they purchased it themselves. And so there is that tension. But again, we're all trying to provide and figure out what our communities need, what our residents need, and they need digital resources. Our schools need digital resources. Our teachers and our parents need digital resources. And so I'm hopeful that when we go forward after the pandemic starts to wind down at some point in the future, we'll be able to have different discussions that are more productive around digital content and how that can be provided through libraries to their communities in a very cost-effective and useful manner, but still allowing the publishers to get what they need and the authors to get what they need.
We get this note from Becky in Concord who says, I work with seniors at the community center in Concord. Many aren't digitally connected. Is there a way they can borrow hard copies of books while the library is closed? I know bookstores are mailing purchases, but that gets pricey for senior citizens.
That's a great question. Most of our libraries in New Hampshire have their physical buildings closed, are not accepting returns, and are not doing curbside delivery. There's a number of people who have been vocal about saying, why can't you do curbside? Restaurants are doing curbside. I think one of the key differences there is that restaurants who are doing curbside, you're pulling up, you're taking a package from them, taking it home, you're keeping it in your kitchen, and then you're eating it and it's done. With library materials, there's an exchange of materials there. And as we talked about before, we're trying to figure out the scientific data behind how long does this virus live on certain surfaces. And most books and DVDs and audiobooks, et cetera, all have plastic on them. And there's not good scientific data about how we need to handle those safely. So right now, as far as hard copies of stuff, because of that exchange, we're really not doing it. Now, I do have to say that one of the other pieces of this is we do have a huge, a larger population of blind and print challenged people in the state, and we are still providing services to them, and a lot of that is digital as well. So I understand there are technological challenges, but I've been hearing from a lot of libraries about how the older population is really, really upping their game to try to figure out how to use some of these services. And frankly, for anyone with a visual impairment or visual challenges, reading on an ebook can be a whole new wide world experience, because you can change the font size on there. You can carry this. It's a lot lighter than a regular print book. So I would just suggest that with people who are of an older population, check in with your library, because often there's tech help, both, like I said, on an online platform such as a Zoom call or through YouTube videos that they've created. And there's also one-on-one help over the phone. We did that a lot at Baker Free Library, where we provided tech support over the phone to people. So I would encourage the older generation to really consider opening their doors a little bit wider towards looking at technology, and not to be scared of it, because librarians are here to help. That's one of the great things that we are capable of doing.
Speaking of let me just bring in a comment from Barbara, who wrote in, who says, thanks for doing this program. She says, I'd like to give a shout out to Wendy Rowe at our own Barrington Public Library, who called every member of my family who has a library card to remind us of the online features available to us. So another shout out for the online. As we wrap up, I want to ask you both, Amy, Lori, what you're most worried about or hopeful for as libraries and librarians look toward the future. We'll start with you, Amy.
Well, I'm always hopeful. I mean, I'm a hopeful person, and we'll be back. We'll be back in the buildings, and librarians, more than anyone, are dying to get some of those great new physical books to people. Like, back to that last question, I feel like, boy, we're in favor of getting things to people however we can right now, but we are looking forward to the day these new bestsellers keep coming out, and you're like, oh, I wish I could get that to someone. But the thing I'm most worried about, Peter, is definitely our vulnerable populations, and that's who I'm always the most worried about. I'm worried about our patrons who are already isolated, who come to the library, you know, as I said, whether it's to use a computer or talk, and I think about them, and I think, where are they now? Because not everybody is, we can't get in touch with everybody, right?
Yeah.
And what help will we be able to provide? What will they need? It may be a while. We may be opening libraries in phases, so it may be a while before we can be that third space for people again. So that's what I worry about the most.
And Lori, really quickly, your major concern, 10 seconds or so.
I just want to say that librarians are resilient, and libraries in their communities really do help all the community, not just the people who have a library card. And so I want people to realize all the great things librarians are doing to support their communities as a whole, because we are all going to see revenue shortfalls,
okay. And
we need all the dollars we can get.
Thank you very much. Lori Fisher, Assistant State Librarian at the New Hampshire State Library, and Amy Lappin, President of the New Hampshire Library Association. Thank you very much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this has been The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.